Michelle, why do I feel as if we've already podcast these final two episodes of season one?
Probably because we've talked about so much leading up to it.
But I could swear I've like written notes and talked about the notes and traded ideas and...
Yeah, just... I promise you, not with me. Remember, really, it elicited more emotion than I would have thought.
I think these two are the favorite, my two favorite episodes of the whole 2-year run.
Really? Why?
Because it's kind of the finalization of their whole plan to get this laptop, this portable computer together and to see if it'll sell, to see which philosophy went out. Is it the, is it like Cameron's idea or is it Gordon's nuts and bolts bare metal idea? And plus it's like very, it's very historical, like seeing the Macintosh, seeing what happens finally with Hunt, seeing these real life events at Comdex, just seeing them be creative when they come up against obstacles, maybe seeing them more act like a team than ever before. At least for a little while they act together. I don't know. You know, just like these two.
I just felt like Nine was such a roller coaster. It was just a roller coaster, and it had my emotions just all over the place, and I was really pulling for them to do well. And, you know, they take you up, and then they drop you down, and then they take you up, and then, I mean, you just don't ever know where it's going to go next. 10, I was so frustrated watching 10.
You don't remember 10 from before?
No. I just remember pieces of it. I, of course, remember, you know, like the main parts of it. I don't know if we want to spoil it or not. But yeah, I definitely saw it. But I didn't dislike everything going on as much last time as I did this time. Like I said, I think I'm just more emotionally invested in everything this time or something. Because 10, I just wanted... It was very frustrating. 9 was a roller coaster, but 10 just frustrated me to no end.
Well, 109 is Apelia. Apelia is a festival, actually. It's a, let me read it here.
A fire festival.
It's a fire festival in Shetland, Scotland. Yep. It's in the middle of winter. It actually marks the end of the Yule season. I actually wrote down what this stuff means. Up means end. Heli means holiday or festival. Kind of like holiday. Up heli. End of festival all. Up heli a, I guess. Up heli a, or a, is all. So the end of the holiday festival all. And it was kind of interesting to me that this, at the time that they wrote this, this is the penultimate episode of season one, but to them at the time, it could have been the penultimate episode of the whole shooting match. They didn't know at the time that they had a season two.
Right.
So they had to plan these like they were coming in for a landing here for the whole show. And so it kind of the ending of things, the ending of their plans, the results, the penultimate ending of their all their planning and plotting and strategy and inventing and assembling and fighting. Apelia, I just really like this episode, and I think it brought a lot of these strings together in a really interesting way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it brought out a lot of the good in a lot of the characters and the things that we'd been wanting to see, but I also think it brought out a lot of the bad and some things that we didn't want to see. I couldn't get over how it yanked me back and forth. So,
all right, well, they're driving to Las Vegas in the family wagon.
How do you like Cameron in those scenes?
I don't know. I mean, take it or leave it. Why? What did you notice about her?
Oh my gosh, she's just such a slob in those scenes. She's like licking the ketchup off of her hands and handing stuff to people, and just has no regard or respect that this is their, you know, life. I mean, their livelihood. It's, you know, when she's just. I don't know.
She's barely past a street teenager. We got to remember that. She's not a 30-year-old
Yeah, but no, come on. I've still got a teenage daughter, and she would never, I mean, it was crazy.
She doesn't eat double cheeseburgers and get big blobs of hot sauce on the notes when she hands them around.
No, she certainly respects other people's property with stuff like that. It's just, I don't know, I didn't like that at all. I thought it would annoy you more than it obviously did.
They're going to Vegas. They're in the family truckster. They're several hundred miles in. Your car's not going to be neat as a pin after a road trip like that. It's all fast food and talking heads. And Joe's the only one working, really. He's taking notes on the giant. You're right about Cameron. She's kind of saying, why even bother? If they want it, they'll order it. If they don't, they won't. She's, like, not even concerned about planning or anything. And Gordon and Donna are just reminiscing about all the parties that are ahead of them in the Vegas atmosphere that they probably remember from their other product.
Yeah.
The symphony. So Gordon's reminiscing about the parties and promoting everything. But all around, I think they're pretty exuberant. I think their team mood is pretty up.
Well, yeah, that was definitely like an uphill thing that they showed us, because it's like the beginning. They start out and they're happy and they're excited about what's going on. So this is the first up that they give us.
So Joe tells them the background of Uphelier.
Yeah.
People dress up in the Viking costumes. They get into squads or teams. They're drinking and singing and dancing. Then at midnight, they burn a huge wooden ship to the ground. And Gordon says, why the hell did you just tell us that? So Michelle, why did Joe relate the Uphelier festival to the people in the car?
Well, he actually said the winners burn it to the ground. That's what I wrote down that he said. And I just think he was anticipating, like Joe does, right? Winning this and being able to put everything, all the bad that they've just, this long path that they've come down, put it behind them.
Well, why would Gordon crap on that? What, if Joe is being optimistic, like, hey, we're about to reach our finest hour, we're going to have a festival, we're going to prove, this is what other people do when they win, we're going to win. Why would Gordon crap all over that?
I don't know.
Mood.
I didn't even think about that. Why? What did you think?
Well, I don't think it's Joe preparing to celebrate. I think it's Joe just teeing them up that this is our final moment. This is our chance to shine. Like, they don't have victory quite yet. I'm sure they anticipate being successful and all that great stuff, the optimistic visualizations, but they're in the game still. They're not at the victory. They're not at the finish line yet.
No, but it's neat to see them excited anyway.
Yeah, Joe's trying to keep them excited. He's trying to say, you know, we're going into battle here. Here's what other people do when they go into battle. And plus the whole penultimate thing. I think the writers are trying to tell us that this is we're near the end. We're near the end, certainly of this season and maybe of the whole series. But Gordon, I think it was a little bit over his head. I don't think he was being so negative. It was just kind of over his head. Like,
okay. You think he was more saying, like, why are you telling us this? Like, why are you telling us this story?
Yeah.
More than why are you trying to relate that to us?
Why are you being your insanely philosophical mode, in your insanely philosophical mode again when we're just trying to go to a show? I think that's what Gordon meant. Anyway, they get to Vegas, Michelle. The old Vegas. Now, you've never been to Vegas, right?
I haven't.
This is the old Vegas. The old Vegas with the Frontier Hotel. And it really looks quite different now than it did in 1984 or 1983, 84. It looks a little bit old-fashioned-y. It looks kind of like the 50s/60s Vegas-y look when you think of, I don't know, the Rat Pack and like the old Dean Martin movies and the Ocean's 11 original movie and stuff like that. It looks Wild West more than it does now.
That's great.
But it's the old Vegas. They get to the registration, and Cardiff's registration is canceled. Their card has been declined and frozen due to a pending federal investigation, Michelle.
Yep.
And there's no other rooms. There's like 5 deep or 10 deep of people waiting for rooms.
30 people waiting for, And this is where we come down. You know, they get there, they're excited, they need to be right there to be in this stuff. They've got so much going on, and this is where the parties are and where you get the people in your room and get them interested and everything. And since Boz or Cardiff or Boz or whatever is under the investigation, under FBI investigation, they don't even want to rent him a room. And it's just, you know, so they drop us. It was like all excitement on the way and happy and then drop us right here.
Well, I like that they're teeing it up for them to have – they're throwing an obstacle in their path for them to have to overcome.
First of many.
several obstacles. So Joe reps himself as Bosworth, first of all. That ends up making it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And because they've lost their room, they not only have just lost a place to sleep, but they've lost their base of headquarters. They lost where all the walk-in traffic are going to come, where they're going to have this party. It's right next to the actual Comdex event. So people, they can't go down the block, you know, 7 or 8 blocks down the street. They have to be right next to everything. So it's bad news that they've lost this room.
Yep.
And so then we get a commercial. And we come back from the commercial. Gordon's ready to shine. He's shined a little bit now in these last couple episodes. Did you like Gordon coming back to life a little bit?
You know, yeah, I did. I really did. We've seen that a couple times, like you said, the last couple episodes. And I really liked him. And then I really didn't. And then I kind of did again. So they were even playing with my emotions over Gordon in this one.
Well, Gordon remembers. He either sees them or hears something about them. But these two brothers that run a printer company. Do you remember how he found out they were there? Looking at the program, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what he did. Yeah, and it was the same people that they had met with the Symphonic in 81.
They make the Occasion Master printer, Michelle, that can print personal files like balloons and bowls and just crap on different size paper for invitations and menus and stuff. Personalized printer. And they give the most drab presentation in the history of talking in front of people.
It's pretty bad.
And but Gordon's plan is to undermine them and then get their room. So Gordon and Joe sit in on their little presentation, and Gordon's asking them all the technical stuff about is it serial, is it a parallel port, how much does it cost? It's a $900 printer, and it prints like wedding invitations, like something you would use every now and then. Seems like a pretty extravagant product. Well,
yeah, and maybe wedding invitations. Things like, remember those continuous roll printers from the 80s or the 90s, I guess, even, that you would do banners and stuff with? It was like, weren't they called, you said dot matrix, right?
Yeah, but theirs is a little different. I think theirs is like a...
It would print cards or something, but the cards were so, you know... 90s, 80s.
Clunky. They print different size paper and different stock paper. They just do more than a regular printer does. And they also print like graphic, like not nice photoshopped looking images that we can print now.
No, they completely print... pixelated, pretty rough.
Like, remember how, what's his name? Yo-Yo printed a heart or something on the...
Exactly. Yeah.
That was all new back then.
Yeah.
So Gordon asks for a demo, and of course the paper immediately snags and crashes and tears. It looks horrible. And Joe's standing in the back like an observer. While Gordon's kind of looking casual, like he might just be a attendee at the show, Joe's all slicked up like in a suit, like he's a slick IBM guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gordon suggests that IBM may have a competing product to this printer. It's interesting that he uses the exact problem that they have with their computer. IBM has a potential competing product potentially coming out. It's mysterious. They don't know when. But if it does come out, it's going to be tough to compete with.
Well, right. I mean, because that terrified them. So I guess he knows what would terrify another small startup.
So Joe works his magic and hints at being the financial savior. Like, you're going to get steamrolled by us. I'm with IBM. We have this thing like figured out. It's going to be cheap. It's going to be excellent. You're just going to be nothing when we come out. But I hate seeing little guys fail. I'll buy you out of your room and your supplies for your party.
I dislike this so bad. Why? I really didn't like this. And I knew you would. Right?
I loved it.
Yeah. I was actually thinking that as I was writing this down. This isn't like stepping on the competition. This is like destroying somebody else to get what you want. I didn't like it at all.
Well, those two guys, those brothers, were done a favor by these guys destroying them. Because they had a shit product. They tried to do things in a shit, and they were shitty presenters. They tried to do shit and tried to present shit, and they got what they was really worth.
Well, but the printers, IBM wasn't really coming out with the printers.
But their printer didn't work.
Well, it jammed. The printer jammed, but they used to do that. I remember when they used to jam.
Yeah,
like
and
that.
Better people came along and made better printers and the better technology won.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't
These guys
think...
needed the they needed the lesson. The best they got the value of this was the lesson. The learning experience. Like maybe we shouldn't be presenting. Maybe we should hire somebody that's slicker talking that knows a little bit more about how to work a crowd. You know, it's just survival. It's just business.
Yeah,
it's pretty mean. It's pretty cutthroat, but that's how it works.
Yeah, I didn't like him doing that. I thought that was a little bit too far. I really did. I thought that was just going too far. I didn't like it.
You would have gone down the block, several blocks, and tried to make do with your room.
No, I wouldn't have done that. I don't really know what I would have done, but I like to think that I wouldn't cut somebody else's throat so I could do my own thing.
Well, Joe gets the sweet and the shrimp, and they get what they need.
Yep.
So while he's doing that, I also liked how they split off and did each part of their team was doing different tasks. So Donna's negotiating now for the booth. They've also not only lost the room, but they lost their booth space. So she has to get a booth.
Yep.
So she gets a shittier booth, not the nice one next to the two major, Tandy and whoever else, I forget who. But she gets a shitty one with cash. She's just flipping dollars at this guy. And then the free software babes are walking around handing out, I don't know, free floppy disks.
Yeah, some kind of software, they said.
The pretty girls.
The porn stars.
There was some show, I can't remember if I was at it or I heard about it. It's been so long ago. There's a show where a robot would roll up to you on like a Segway. Just a screen, like an iPad eye level on a screen. Mm-hmm. And it would say, it would hack your phone and read.
No way.
Yeah, that's how smart these people are at these shows. I mean, they actually used to tell you, don't turn anything on at these shows. Don't turn your phone on. Don't turn on anything that has a password. And that's how those companies would say, you need security. You need cybersecurity. And here's, you know, we could easily get your passwords, but here's how you can prevent that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but anyway, there's a porn convention next door to the Comdex show. And these girls, I guess they're part of the porn convention and the show, or they're just models that are.
They said that they're porn stars that moonlight doing this over there. That's what they said. I don't know if they were saying it tongue in cheek or not, but I don't think they were. But Donna's getting some ideas looking at them anyway.
Donna and Joe. Anyway, so while Donna's getting the display, Cameron's thinking of what to design inside the display. It's all genius. I liked how Joe and Gordon figured out getting the room. Donna figured out how to get the booth, and Cameron figured out what the stand-up display should be in the booth.
Right. Yeah.
So they're inventors. They invent in more ways than just PCs and software. They're like life. They're creative in life. So anyway, that we go back to the room, and Donna and Gordon are checking the computer. The static in the room has messed it all up. So Joe has to step up and be creative here. He has to build a static-free part of their suite. He has to make one room into a static-free room.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, that the static and the carpeting in a room would mess it up when we think back now. And I mean, it would. It was totally believable, but you think about computers and stuff now. I don't know. I just, that kind of caught me off guard of how delicate they were back then. That's one of the things that I really like about this show is that it brings back all of the nuances of the way things were.
Yeah, it's realistic. Totally realistic.
Yeah, and it brings up all these little ideas and things that you just never think about anymore, maybe, but once you see them happen, you go, oh, yeah, it really was like that.
It's still like that, kind of. Like, when you upgrade the RAM in your computer, you put in those chips. They're in, like, mm-hmm. they're in like aluminum foil little sheaths. And you're supposed to discharge your static electricity from your fingers before you touch them. like it, you're supposed to touch a piece of metal or ground yourself, so you get like you get that little shock in the room if you scuff your feet on the carpet.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because that little shock of electricity, which is like millivolts, can harm that RAM chip. But anyway, they're fixing the room because it's all staticked up. And as they kind of come back together, the groups, Joe asks Cameron, is anyone coming? She's putting styrofoam and chains and briefcases and spray paint to make some really cool looking, like, what the hell is this display that gets everyone to look at it? Like, I got to see what this company's all about.
Well, right, because they didn't have the space to do what they had intended to do. Wasn't that why they had to come up with something different? Because they took the stuff, because they were going to go, and they had all their setup and everything, but the booth that they got was so small and crappy.
Yeah, I think Donna even says that. I can't hang my stuff on that little drape in the back.
Right.
That's not big enough and strong enough.
Right, so they have to improvise everything.
But I just really liked how the three separate groups are ignorant of each other's actions. And it implies some trust, too. Like, when they get back together, Joe says, well, I did my part. Is anyone coming? Like, he has no idea what Cameron did to set up the booth.
Right.
He's trying to get the room, and, you know, he's hoping they get the booth and do the best they can. And so Cameron just says, well, I would, and she grins. Pretty cool. I really liked what she did with that idea.
Yeah. It was so different than everybody else and what everybody else had that it was attention grabbing, and I don't know that we would expect anything less from Cameron.
Also, a little significant of mutiny. We see the drippy spray paint and then red, just sloppily, almost angrily written on the wall.
Yep.
Pretty neat.
I got that too.
So the geeks show up at their party, at their room. The first people to show up are these geeks, and then we cut to a commercial. And we come right back from the commercial to that party, and people are partying pretty hard, but they're all kind of waiting to see the giant. I like the music in this party. They play several different songs. Like, the one song playing now, I think, is an old Flock of Seagulls song. The team is kind of flirting with all the people. Donna and Cameron are talking to people.
Yeah.
And Gordon's trying to fix the computer. It's still struggling from this static problem to get – he can't get it to boot up or start properly.
Yeah.
Joe finally interrupts him and pulls a bluff to get people all excited. But I think that whole part was pretty cool too.
Yeah, that was scary to me. That kind of scared me because it was like, is he going to be able to pull this off? But it was perfect.
He remains the ultimate showman.
Yeah.
Like, come on real close. You all want to see it, right? You want me to turn it on? And he pulls this big tease like, okay, everybody ready? And then he pops the girl's idea. He starts spewing out all the specs and facts and then replaces it with fun. You know, we can do all this. In fact, I'm going to print a spreadsheet. Everyone want to see it? Or the stripper girls next door.
Right.
They're pretty funny. And then he finally ends up just saying, okay, F all this. Just go out and get drunk and show up at our booth hungover tomorrow and you'll see everything. And then the party just kind of rages on.
Yep.
I really like this.
Yeah, that was really good. And it was so funny because he said, it's sexy and feather light at only 15 pounds.
Yep.
That was so funny to hear that. It was like, okay. But yeah, he was mixing sex appeal in, which Joe tends to do anyway, but he was mixing sex appeal in with this computer presentation. And I thought it was brilliant.
Well, it works with everything. Cars, food.
You're right.
Vacations. Mm-hmm. So it all kind of ends and winds down, and Cameron's talking to her old friend, the guy telling her about California. California's where it's at, baby.
Mm-hmm.
But she's worried about earthquakes and cults, Michelle. Now, when you think of California, are you worried about earthquakes if you ever were to visit California?
No. I mean, no, I know they're there, but, I mean, you guys live out there all the time, and you're okay, so no.
You're worried about cults?
The cult, yeah. No, I'm not worried about anything.
All right, well, they go out for pancakes. That was their hot date.
Okay, what was this, though? What was this with Joe and the way he was looking? They showed it more than once, maybe at least three times with Cameron with these guys that were kind of flirting. And I didn't even picture Cameron flirting back. That's not how I took her demeanor with these guys. She was just interacting with them because they had a lot in common. But Joe didn't like it.
Well, yeah, Joe's all business. Cameron is still in the mode of, like, this is fun. She did her little she chipped in her little bit to build the booth, but she's still there. It's like, this is fun. I mean, they still got to fix this computer.
Yeah, but was Joe jealous? Was that what that was?
I didn't get any of that. No, I don't think so. I just think he thought, okay, we got to keep moving the project forward.
Okay.
I didn't sense any sort of jealousy. If it was,
I didn't know if it was jealousy, but I sensed something because every time he would catch her, or not every time, I don't know, but several times he caught her talking to these guys, and he just had a really weird look on his face. And I was wondering what you thought that was, because at various points they were all just schmoozing with people, but he looked at Cameron weird, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I thought it might be a little jealousy, and I'll tell you
why. Because of what happens later, yeah.
Right, that's what I was going to say. When that comes up, I'll tell you.
But I didn't pick up on it there. So Joe talks to this guy, Dennis. He's the buyer at Computerland. Yep. Do you remember them? Computerland. I just remember the name. Like, I don't remember going into, like, a Best Buy, like, a Computerland being, like, a Best Buy.
Right, but huge stores is what I remember with the name on it. I don't remember going in either, but
kind of like Best Buy, but all computers.
Right.
I liked how Dennis and Joe have the salesman rapport. Dennis tells him, if you want to sell station wagons, you better have a sports car in the window.
Yep.
Have some glitzy candy in the window to get people to show up for your product.
Yep.
And then they finally get the giant to work later that night. So as it turns on, as it boots up, it runs through Cameron's startup routine. And it now looks like Michelle can handle both first names and last names, because who's ever doing it, Donna? Is it Donna? Types in thank God, and it says, hello, thank God.
Yep.
So it got both names. And then Donna and Gordon flirt over the screen, via the screen. What did you think... did you remember when they decided to leave Cameron's system into the project?
I didn't think they did.
Yeah, I didn't think they did either. Rewatching this, I'm like, I thought they booted her system out of this thing.
Right, right. I was surprised that we even saw that. The only thing that I remember that hinted toward it was once the FBI or whoever had come in and taken everything, and Gordon and Cameron were in Joe's apartment sitting there. You know how they like had this conversation waiting on Joe to get back so they could tell him that Gordon had stolen or taken the computer. She was working on something, I think, there. And it seemed like she might have been working on that.
Maybe
but I don't
to
know
improve
if,
it enough to make it less memorable.
Right, right. And her and Gordon were, for once, working together towards something. So maybe there. But if it wasn't there, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a good catch. I'd have to go back and rewatch and research that. But so Donna and Gordon go off and flirt. Now they flirt off over the screen. Then they kind of go off and get their own privacy in the room. And then when they wake up, they kind of dream a little bit. Like, this could be so good for us and the girls. They're kind of dreaming of their success that they think might just really fucking work, man. We got a pretty cool product here. It looks like it's fixed.
Right.
We got the booth together. We overcame these little obstacles of no room and no booth and no working computer.
Yep.
They pulled a lot of hats out of the fire in the last 12 hours. I also liked how Caesar's Palace was right out their window. So we're reminded they're in Vegas. They're in the bright lights. They're in the place where they could really make stuff happen here.
Yeah.
So Donna reveals to Gordon it would have been really nice to have been asked to join Cardiff, the freak show. Even though it's a freak show, it just would have been nice if you asked me if I wanted to join, even if I didn't join.
Right.
And then Gordon.
Yeah, we've had that conversation many times about Donna and Gordon, and I don't know that Gordon doesn't appreciate her, but he doesn't show it very well a lot of the time.
Gordon fends it off by saying, by attaching all the risks to it, and I'm not sure if I asked you to come with me that you would come with me because of all these risks, like the symphonic kind of repeating itself again.
Right.
And Donna says, well, we're married and we already jumped. You know, we've already taken in a lot of risks. We're in this whole thing together.
Right, right. That was a good one. That was a good one. He said he wasn't sure if he held her hand if she'd jump with him. And she says they're married. They've already jumped.
Do you think this is a little too much of a recovery from the time. I mean, they just left. They just came, overcame a pretty bad time before they left for Las Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, really, probably not even 12 hours ago.
She was going to leave him with her suitcases packed.
Well, I know he was digging a giant hole in the backyard and cutting himself and leaving the kids to fend for. Yeah, I mean, it was a bad situation, but I don't know. I mean, I kind of bought into it because she has such a forgiving, nurturing nature that I bought it. So
Joe wakes up, and here's where I had a little logistic problem, Michelle. Like some of the stuff in True Detective where they zoomed up and down the state without, you know, like, oh, I'm back. I just went up to Northern California.
Right.
So Joe wakes up, and he's talking to Cameron about this rock that she has, and this rock is part of the Hoover Dam. I went to look it up. I know the Hoover Dam. Yeah, like you can take a helicopter ride from Vegas and you're over the Hoover Dam in like 8 minutes. But I think it's like 50 miles away. I think it would have been quite a project for the drunken partygoers to go out for pancakes and drive 50 miles out, goof around at the Hoover Dam, drive 50 miles back, and then be kind of – I mean, she's looking pretty chipper in the morning there. This is like only several hours later.
Right.
But – She is that, and it's, you know, it's kind of a fun adventure. They went out to the Hoover Dam. By the way, the Hoover Dam is really cool. You drive the road goes across the top of it, so you can get out of your car and like look down that big arcing sweeping. When you think of how it looks, that big curve of the dam,
that make you dizzy.
You can spit down on it. It's really,
really?
Cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I kind of caught that. And Cameron apologizes for not going to Joe when Bosworth had this idea about the finance switching, the money moving around.
Yep.
And Joe says, I think I got this right. Joe says, well, it's all happening in California. Maybe you should go to Palo Alto. Maybe this is where you're thinking he was jealous.
Yeah, because he heard the friend invite her, the other guy invite her. And when he said that, yeah, he says, maybe you should go to Palo Alto. And she comes back with, well, maybe we should.
Yeah. So he's being a little snipey, like, yeah, maybe you should go with your new friend to Palo Alto.
I didn't take it as him being ugly, but I took it as him kind of filling his place, you know, like saying, maybe you should go. And kind of just looking for her response to that. Which, of course, if that's what he wanted, that was perfect. But here we go. I mean, it's this constant roller coaster with the two.
I didn't get any of that till you just said that comment a few minutes ago, that was why he maybe said that way. So maybe you're onto something.
I don't know. Maybe.
So the next day, everybody goes to the show, or that day, later that morning, they go into the show. And some of the new developments in the show is Hewlett-Packard has a new touchscreen.
Mm-hmm.
There are things called high-density floppy disks. I remember those. We could put more on the floppy disks.
Yep.
And Hunt is there.
Oh, my God. Okay. This whole time, I didn't know what you were talking about because I did not remember that. I don't know why. I must have fallen asleep the first time I watched that or something. No kidding. I don't remember that. And my jaw hit the floor. I did not know that
it's
was going to happen.
Hunt and Gordon's neighbor, the guy who crashed the car and Gordon fired.
Larry, I think.
They're partnered up, and they've got an 8086 processor and a double-sided motherboard, just like that giant. It's copied. They call it the slingshot, Michelle. And Donna just freaks out. Donna slingshots her way right into Hunt and starts scratching and clawing at him.
But they really don't have the computer, right? They just have the idea. They're there with an idea. They never show us. Or do they?
Yeah,
the
I think
actual
they do.
Computer. They do. They show us.
Well, they don't start it up and let us type on it, but.
Right. I don't think they actually had it done. I think they were bluffing. And I'll tell you why when we get
all right.
to this.
It's kind of important because the fact that they're first makes them get this order.
It's cheaper. And it's they're first and they're cheaper.
And faster.
And faster, right.
Right. So Donna, in her head, as she's walking back to the room with Gordon, retraces her steps about how Hunt might have found out about the idea and maybe gotten it from her or stolen it through her or somehow figured it out through her. And then she and Gordon start to fight.
Yeah, I really disliked Gordon here. I disliked him more than I've disliked him up until this point.
You want to say why?
Well, I mean, he was horrible. He was horrible to her. And this was not Donna's fault. This was actually Gordon's fault. Like you had pointed out, when he faxed all of the specs and everything to Donna in that hotel room and accidentally sent them to Hunt. And then he is just, I mean, he is just talking to her awful. And
well, if Cameron implying that she, if Joe interpreting even incorrectly that Cameron might be interested in another guy, Joe is able to handle it. Gordon interpreting that Donna was flirting or having an affair with another guy, he cannot handle it. That's a huge difference between Joe and Gordon. And even later on, he's like, look, are you having an affair with this guy? The biggest thing, they're in the midst of this huge potential success business-wise, and the biggest thing he's worried about is her maybe having had an affair.
Yeah, but she says, I didn't, but I should have. And he doesn't even hear that. It's like that's not the important thing to him. It's crazy. This whole situation's crazy. He is jumping on her, and he's just horrible to her with every single bit of it's his fault. And she's feeling guilty enough over it already because she's assuming she did something to let this cat out of the bag. And she did talk to him a little bit, but nothing.
She told him about the double-sided motherboard.
She did, but Gordon actually faxed.
I know, but if she wasn't on the trip, even though it was a bit, there was a, I mean, it's gray, it's some of it's gray area that if she wasn't on the trip with Hunt, then that would have never happened. It's being a little petty by Gordon. I understand what you're saying, but still, he's pretty upset. His whole life has been derailed here.
Is hers. I mean, it's not just him. It's him,
right,
and
but
her.
He's latching on to what he thinks he knows is the reason.
That was pretty infuriating.
All right. Well, Joe comes in now and he says, well, all right, screw everything. The buyer wants a station wagon. He wants the plain Jane, faster and cheaper computer. He wants the Hunt computer, the slingshot. We're dead. Yep. They'll be in stores by Christmas. So I think they've got it together.
I don't think so yet. I'll tell you why.
All right. He says, well, the slingshot's first. We're not first anymore. And Gordon pulls another iron out of the fire here. He steps into action. Michelle, first step, crack a beer.
Yep.
Second step, open that computer case. And third step, redesign the damn thing. Make it simpler and faster and leaner and cheaper.
Yep.
He takes out the operating system with all the cool interfaces and puts in MS-DOS and
yes, he does.
Gets them back on track. All right, and then Hunt and Joe have a little meeting. And Hunt, if you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at Hunt. That guy is a dick.
He's horrible. He is. But now let me ask you this, Mike. How is what Hunt did different than what Cardiff did to the printer guys?
Well, I think Hunt actually literally was going to go through their garbage to steal stuff. And I think when you get – Joe took an IBM and took it apart and re-engineered it. That's kind of gray area. That's like
– Hunt brings that up too.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, that's but going in and stealing something from somebody's house, getting a fax missent to you and then copying it and stealing the idea, that's directly theft.
Sure. And I'm not actually talking about that. What I'm talking about is at this convention, these slingshot guys, Hunt and I think Larry, they are doing whatever they have to do to get to the top and get this done first. And yeah, they did. I don't think they stole it, though. I don't think they stole anything other than the idea of it, which, I mean, is certainly wrong. But if we're talking about wrong, then we got to lay Joe and everybody else on the line, too. Cameron and Gordon and all of them. Because here, Hunt offers to buy them. And why would he want to buy them if he already had it? There would be no reason.
Kill off a competitor?
I don't think so. I don't think they had it. I think they just got the idea. First of all, think about how long it took them to come up with this and everything and the struggles and the path of building this and then getting
it
there.
So you think he took a – well, I don't know how he would have gotten his hands on a giant You think he took a giant, put it in a different case, and put it... Because that Computerland buyer, Dennis, is going to ask him to boot the damn thing up. He's not just going to look at it and go, oh, that looks like it might be a cool product. I'll take 60,000 of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I just really got the idea. I just don't know why he would bother buying them. I felt like he wanted the technology.
Because the... And here we are doing two podcasts in a row, so it's hard sometimes to separate them. When they get the new shipment, when Cardiff gets the new shipment, that happens later than this, right? They get the 100 of them, and they start handing them around the
office. Oh, yeah, much like, yeah.
Hunt couldn't have gotten his hands on that. He's got a real product there, Michelle. He works for Texas Instruments. He's got the means. He's been stealing this information from Donna all along. I think there was no romance on Hunt's side of that romance.
Oh, I completely agree. I think it was all calculated now.
He may not have 60,000 of them yet, but neither does Cardiff. They only have a couple, you know, they have maybe that one, and they're going to get 100 built, and then they're going to get more built. That's how it works. Hunt has one really working computer, and that's a viable product.
Okay, maybe he did. I just really didn't understand why I would bother buying.
Well, he gets some cool stuff. He gets some cool stuff, and he totally kills off a competitor. And IBM is a year out. You know, Cardiff might be 3 months out.
Right. Okay.
I buy it that he could want that. And he's only going to buy them for stock, too. He's not giving them $2 million in cash. He's giving them stock in his company.
Right, right.
By the way, if you give somebody stock and you say this is worth $2 million, say you have 10 million shares of stock, or say you give – then you can say my company is worth a multiple. I've given you 1 million shares of stock worth $2 million, and our company has 10 million shares of stock. I've got a $20 million company, right? He can leverage that value.
Oh, so you're saying that it even bumps up his value.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something I've given you is worth $2 million, and it represents 10% of my company, so therefore my new company is worth $20
million. Okay.
And so it could be a stock play, too. But Hunt sticks this sword into Joe a little bit. Your mistake was falling in love with the query-based interface. It's ahead of its time, but it's a memory hog. And all the Cameron stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Slingshot now has the inside track to Computerland because it is cheaper and faster. And he says, tell Donna it wasn't personal. Just totally dismisses Donna. Pretty mean.
It's so bad.
And Hunt just says, we're in the compatible business. You tried to be good, and we were just good enough. Like, you're better than us, but we're faster than you. I don't know. It was an interesting little talk here, Hunt and Joe.
It was a terrible blow. This was another one of those drop my stomach dropped out watching. I couldn't believe that happened after everything they'd been through.
So now Joe and Cameron are in the elevator, and they hold hands, so it's still not the death knell for them, Michelle.
No, everything's okay right now.
Pretty bleak for the company.
Yep.
But
it was neat that they kind of turned to each other in that, whereas Gordon completely turned away from Donna, and Cameron and Joe kind of came together in this crisis. So I thought that was an interesting thing to see.
Well, they get back to the room, and Gordon has drunk himself some beer
and
done some redesign, Michelle.
Yep.
He took out the memory, the motherboard, and all the memory, all the extraneous memory that was necessary by the operating system. Didn't take out the memory, took out the operating system that needed the memory so he could take out the memory. And he had borrowed MS-DOS from a friend, probably just super, super basic, bare-bones operating system, startup system. This simplifies the whole thing and cheapens it, makes it less expensive. But Cameron's devastated. You just gutted my whole idea. Don't let him do it. He can't do it. It's wrong. And Joe says, it's right for the machine. So what do you think there, Michelle? Who was right?
I was so frustrated at Cameron in this. Cameron's obviously right, but Joe is right right now. And there was absolutely no choice. Was there any choice at all?
No. This is where I start to wonder, like, didn't we podcast this? Because you and I have talked about this before. Bosworth even tells Joe, maybe it was in season two, because Bosworth at one point tells them, you know, Joe was right for gutting your operating system and getting the product to the market.
Right.
They have to survive and they have to live to fight another day. But Cameron just flies off, and one of her emotional immaturity phases and just storms away.
And it's awful because, I mean, it's not like they couldn't go back and do that 6 months down the road and add that in and, you know, offer another product once they have the backing for this. This is a jugular time. Their company is going through an investigation over the money not being there, and she doesn't want to make this money just because she doesn't want her beautiful Oz taken out.
I think she's super, super immature. She's emotionally immature, and she's just young. She's just not smart enough in business, and she's just like a petulant teenager.
I guess. That was ridiculous.
Okay, we got a commercial. We come back, and the interesting thing now is Joe has to sell what he has now. He has something different now. It's not a sexy, interactive, personal computer. It's just a machine. So he sells
it. Wasn't he brilliant?
Yeah.
He was brilliant, as usual. And Gordon helped him. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they work. They come together again. So Joe sells it like it is. It does basic nuts and bolts. It does. You use it for work. You use it for play. You use it for the family finances. And Gordon's playing some alligator game while he's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Computerland guy's watching. The whole kind of they got like a little crowd of people watching them. And somebody asks about it. I heard it knows your name. Somehow it knows your name. And Joe defends. Joe is brilliant. He's like starting to say, "It's not your friend. It's your tool. It's more important. It's more important to you as a tool than it's important to be unique. So let's all act like adults here and." Forget computers that talk to you and know your name. That's silly.
You want a buddy? Buy a dog.
Yeah, it's just awesome. And also cool here was when the crowd asked about the design, Gordon chips in a little bit and tells them about the double-sided motherboard and credits. And when they ask who thought of that, he credits Donna Clark instead of whatever the other old name was of the mother-in-law.
Yeah, Susan Fairchild. Yeah, but... Also, there was the part where Joe, he's looking at these notes and everything, and that's where he sees this ketchup stain, which is Cameron's ketchup stain from the car.
Yeah, he starts to miss her.
I think he always wonders if she's right, because he does recognize her brilliance, but
he's going to know she's exactly right in about an hour from here,
yep.
Or half hour. So the slingshot guys are there, Larry and Mo and Curly, Larry and Hunt. They ask,
yep.
They start to throw in some monkey wrenches here. So what about the problems with it? What about IBM?
And what about the fixed, have they fixed the heat problem and stuff like that?
Yeah. And Joe just says, look, we took our idea, we made it happen. And Gordon says it's in the metal, and they get just a big approval from the crowd.
Well, yeah, Gordon says they vented the side panels and it was easier after we fired you.
Right, that was a good comeback.
Yeah, he pokes him really good.
So we come back and Computerland Dennis is he's also given his nod of approval by trying to order the damn thing from them. Michelle wants 60,000 units at $900.
Yep.
And then 70,000. He's stopping Joe in the hallway. Like, look, let's make a deal here. Let's get this done. And Joe's just like, look, we'll negotiate tomorrow. I think this is pretty good evidence that Cameron's on his mind and that he's not just there for business only. Like, losing Cameron or Cameron being running away from him or moving away from him is really affecting him.
Yeah, I agree.
And we get a scene of Joe, Gordon, and Donna celebrating with warm champagne. Are about to celebrate. Joe has to go for some ice, and he sees a room with the Macintosh in it. And this scene was just so cool to me. I just really like this scene.
Me too.
That Macintosh is like an idol on an altar. There's candles. It's just really reverent. It's quiet. Everybody's kind of standing there at attention.
And they have all the lights turned down, and it's kind of glowing right there.
And the guy turns it on, and it says, "Hello, I am Macintosh." And Joe just says, "It speaks."
Yep.
Not only knows your name by you typing, asking you in text to type your name, it speaks.
He is blown away.
Yeah, pretty cool. That Macintosh was Cameron. It might as well have been Cameron.
Yep.
Cameron's face on it.
Yeah, because it encompassed every advance she was trying to do. He walked into a room and kind of saw it.
Right. Now, the only thing, that computer was $2,500. That was expensive. So it wasn't the $900 or $700 or $1,000. It was like 2.5 times as much cost.
Right.
So yeah, it speaks, and that's the end of the episode. Now, Michelle, I had one of those Macintoshes. Did you ever play with one, or did you ever have one back when they first came out?
I played with one, but I've never had one.
They were pretty cool. I don't know if it was 15 pounds. It was maybe close to that, but it was pretty light. You could pick it up by the – it had like a slot in the back of it. You could pick up the whole
thing. Like a built-in handle or something.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The keyboard was separate. The keyboard plugged in. And the mouse was separate. But it was a pretty cool little machine. It had a cool screen. But yeah, it was very neat that Joe is falling in love with this Macintosh. And we'll hear more about it in the next episode, 1984.
Yep.
But that was it for Uphelier. Michelle, do you have any final thoughts on it?
No, I was, I was glad when it was over. Honestly, it was really good, but it was one of those so emotionally stressing that I was glad to actually see that episode end, which made me feel conflicted because it was so good. But that ending scene was brilliant, and I just kind of wanted to savor that, too. I was glad they cut it off there.
It was brilliant from start to end, I thought. The way they're going to Vegas to try to sell their product, they hit the obstacles, and another person competes with them, and then they see a totally superior product. And they're minor leaguers playing in the major leagues here. They're just – I mean, they could compete. They are that third tier. Remember when Joe was talking about how – We're the ones IBM's going to clone. IBM's never going to clone a Cardiff. You know, that was salesmanship. That wasn't ever real. Because this stuff is real. This Macintosh is just like a jewel.
Yep.
But I liked how that all came together.
I did too.
All right, so 109, Halt and Catch Fire on West Coast Project. My Twitter handle is @scathingtweets. And what's yours, Michelle?
@Michelle from TN.
All right, well, see you next time on 1984.
See you then.